Welcome back, my dears. That is really one of my favorite sounds. It's always so nice. I hope, however, that time was spent, there was some ease and some nourishment of some form. And as I mentioned before, we'll just move right into the sit. So I'm going to ask you to again close your eyes and just checking in with the body. As a way of landing, arriving, allowing yourself to be available to yourself for this sit. And for the anchor today, I want to have us play in the realm of mindfulness and breathing. And in part, because of this, the movement. This connection between that which is outside and that which is inside. Yeah, we breathe there in, we exhale out. Yeah, so there's this real easy, life-saving, life-giving conversation between us and our environment through the breath, right? Through the wind element. And just noticing without trying to fix or change or alter in any way, just sort of in regular breathing time, how's the breath? Noticing if it's deep or shallow, easy or not. I also just want to add, for some folks, the breath is not a neutral focal point or not a neutral object of awareness. And if it's not, let it go and just allow the attention to rest on a different body sensation. Maybe your hands holding each other. Or just the sensation, the wide angle lens of awareness of sensation. If breath is okay, if it doesn't bring any undue stress to pay attention to, then just allow yourself to kind of rest in this rhythm. There's in breath, there's the out breath. The image that comes is I'm sitting as sort of as a wave moves, the undulation of a wave. You know, the back and forth, and allowing ourselves to rest in this motion, the in and the out, giving and receiving. We're in this flow of generosity. Breath in, breath out. Breathing in, breathing out. If we were outside and close to the trees, there would be a conversation of breathing in oxygen and breathing out carbon dioxide. Yeah. So this way of allowing ourselves through the breath to feel a sense of connection to the natural world. The connection is real. Our life depends upon it. Our awareness, sometimes doesn't rest here. And as just in these moments, allowing yourself perhaps to find, okay, here's a gentle rhythm of the natural breath. Again, we're not trying to shift it or alter it. We're just noticing, oh, this is how this body is breathed. How we take in breath, how we exhale. Yeah. So we can rest the attention on the nose or the mouth. If we breathe in through the nose, exhale through the mouth. We can rest the attention on the rise and falling of the chest. We can rest our attention on the expansion and contraction of the belly. Generally, pick one. And again, with this just gentle curiosity, oh, check this out. What's it like if I allow myself to rest my attention on this movement of this wind element as it comes in, moves out? If the mind is busy and would like a job, maybe an image of the wind blowing the grasses on the hills at Spirit Rock, for those of you who have been on the land, or how the wind makes aspen leaves quake, or how the wind moves our hair, or that any number of ways we can see the evidence of wind by what it's moving. And in having that image, stay clear, it also helps emphasize, oh yeah, we are a part of this natural world. Yeah, this animal body inhales, exhales. Like many of our other fellow sentient beings inhaling and exhaling. So allowing the awareness to rest in this animal bodiness of an in-breath and an out-breath. And as I said before, there's nothing else to do. You have already committed, we're here. And just allowing the attention to just lightly rest. Oh, this is what it feels on the inhale and the exhale. And I'm aware, as I've been sort of talking about the ocean and the undulating, that my body's kind of moved a little bit, rocking back and forth. This in-breath and ex-breath and exhale. It's dramatizing the breath a little bit, but it also there can be a sweetness, like, oh yeah, there is this rhythmic movement in and out. Inhale, exhale. Taking in, letting go. And can we rest our attention on this movement, this conversation we have with the air and space element around us? Breath in, breath out. Breath in, breath out. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats. Sometimes it's a pleasant experience, sometimes less so. Okay. Often it changes moment to moment. Okay. And we just keep coming back to the anchor of the breath. As we know, the mind wanders off. And gently, 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 we bring the mind back here. Sweetie, rest here. Inhale, exhale. Let me see how we are. And please feel my appreciation for the time that we have to sit together. However that sit went, there's a feeling of settledness, just a chance for us to be together in silence. But today I want to play around. We've been on this theme of well, connection. So I'm going to stay in that theme. And I was taking a class last night and heard the line I'd not heard before, that the opposite of addiction is connection. And the class was a lot about different ways that we can connect with ourselves and with others. But I love this idea of well, this makes sense. So the addiction, whether it's addiction to drugs or alcohol or Netflix or shopping or the myriad of things that we can be addicted to, either little A or capital A, it seems to be, as I think into it, kind of a reflection of the level of disconnection we may feel. And when we are allowed to allow ourselves to feel a greater sense of connection to the humans around us or to the natural world, it can ease that sense of isolation. And but it takes some work, right? It really takes some work, particularly, I know we're a long way out of the COVID intensity, but it did really rupture a lot of ways that we could, that we kind of habitually connected with one another. And I wanted to look at connection through, or explore the sense of connection through the lens of generosity. And I'm going to start with a poem that many of you have heard before because I love it and read it often. And it's by Alison Liederman, an East Bay poet, one of my favorites. Consider the generosity of the one-year-old who has no words to exchange with you yet and instead offers up her favorite jeweled-on blanket, her green rhinoceros as big as she is, her cloth doll with long blonde pigtails, her battered cardboard books swung open on their soggy pages, her limitless heart. If you were outdoors, she would hand you a dead beetle, a fistful of grass, a pebble, by way of introduction or just because. And if a moment later she wants it back, it would be for the joy of passing these simple symbols back and forth, freely offered, freely relinquished. This is me. Here is who I am. Oh, in the same way, sun drapes a buttered scarf across your face. Rose opens herself up to your glance, and rain shares its divine melancholy. The whole world keeps whispering or shouting to you, nibbling your ear like a neglected lover, while you worry over matters of finance, of relationship, important issues related to getting and spending, having and hoarding, though you were once that baby, though you are still that world. What I love, so many things about this poem, but it's this idea of the relationship, that the again, this undulating of backing and forthing, of giving and receiving. And again, much as I was hoping to point to with the breathing, as we allow ourselves to kind of rest in this undulation of giving and receiving, of the movement of the wind element through our body, so too can we allow ourselves to abide in this flow of generosity, noticing too where we're not. In certain relationships, it's harder. Perhaps most importantly, how is it within ourselves? The generosity we can offer ourselves, freedom from, say, for example, from a critic that tells us we suck in the numerous ways that an inner critic can, that's not being generous with ourselves. So how do we, that image of the one-year-old offering her jeweled on blanket or the flower, and there's that part of us that's still there, that offering, and the kind of crushing blow that can come when it's not received. I've shared this story before, so forgive me, but when Jessie, my daughter, was young, and we were then living in Colorado and coming back to California with some regularity, and partly just to have something to do while we were traveling, this started when she was about three, I'd buy this, it was like the bags of Ghirardelli chocolates that were individually wrapped. And in the airport, I was like, why don't you give these away? And she had, she was keyed in on pilots. So whenever she saw a pilot, she wanted to offer them the chocolate. And nine times out of 10, the pilot said no. This 3-year-old is offering you a chocolate, and they'd say no. And I was like, let's maybe pick somebody else. Like, what about the folks who are working in the airport? Like, try that. Without a doubt, they're delighted by this little thing offering them a chocolate. And she had said, you know, it feels so much better when people take what I'm offering. Just like, yes, it does. And really, for me, took it as a profound teaching for myself of like in my marriage, which fell apart, but sort of looking at, were there ways in which my husband would offer things and I wouldn't accept them? Yeah, there were. And sort of being able to pay attention to where do I get caught in not accepting that which is being offered by someone. And a recent example, I went to see my daughter. She's in Florida for the winter, and Jessie's been horseback riding. She's very serious about it. She's been doing it for about 10 years, and never has she ever offered for me to ride one of her ho a horse. And the first time she did, I was visiting her in January. And I had, for those who remember, I had a broken wrist. And I was like, really? Okay. So I get on the horse with my broken wrist. And then it happened this weekend. Again, she offered. And I was wearing shorts, and it's a fancy barn, and I'm in shorts. And she said, do you want to ride a horse? And I was gonna, I thought no, because I don't look like I'm well equipped to ride a horse. And then the thought was like, she's offering you this. Like it's a generous act. And I was like, oh, okay, yes, sure. And it was totally fine and fun and a delight to be on a horse, but being able to catch that. This is, you are being offered something. Don't say no. Because how often do we move in the world and we say no to things because we don't see it as a gift, or we don't accept it, or we're not tracking or open enough to watch how things are offering themselves to us. Like that beautiful poem, like the rose offers itself, the rain offers itself, right? The sun, it's sunny now. Of like, how can we pay attention to, like, oh, there are ways in which the world does offer itself up to us, I think is a line from Dave Dwight. And but we have to be aware enough and slow down enough to be able to catch it and pay attention to it. And it is, it's that, you know, when you catch someone's eye or the delight, or it can be its own practice of watching where are things being, what's being offered to me. And I've done this as practice before, and it really can change how, for myself, how I've moved in the world. If that's what I'm orientating towards. It's nice, right? There's a softness there. It's like, oh yeah, there's a giving and a receiving. And again, I think that that second part is important too, to also to pay attention to how are we giving. And it's not sort of in the Dana talks, Dana meaning the Pali word for generosity. It's often given to please will you support the teachers, which is its own valuable practice, absolutely. And that it's not a financial, it's not about financial transactions. It's about a willingness, the action of giving. You know, and the I've shared this before, but the Buddha, in teaching to his 7-year-old son Rahula about the importance of generosity and how it's a threefold gift, thinking about it, oh, I want to give this to someone, the action of giving, and then the reflection upon, oh, I gave that. And it's just, it's an incredible investment, you know, getting that sort of the threefold return. Not that it's about the return, but one of the benefits of being generous is being able to abide in that delight of giving. Yeah, and that was very much teaching, like, pay attention to this. So the delight that comes when we think about, oh, I would like to do this for someone. And then you actually do it, and then you get to think back on, oh, that was fun. And again, it's not about what the thing is. It's the act. It's the thought. And there's a Pali word, kaga, caga, which is, it is that feeling. If dana is the action of giving, Kaga is the reflection upon it. And I want to share some folks reading about it. This is from an article. Nikki Marafura, one of our beloved teachers here. And she writes about, sorry. Another dimension of giving is better conveyed by the related Pali word kaga. Kaga is a quality of mind heart that is fundamentally generous, an aspect of freely releasing, relinquishing, and giving with an open hand, automatically, as it were. It arises out of the freedom of a heart that doesn't cling, but shares its gifts with generosity, with, I'm sorry, but shares its gifts with kindness and friendliness in the spirit the Buddha suggests to us. To withhold from another is to withhold from oneself. To be stingy with another is to be stingy with oneself. Gil Fronsdale writes about dana refers to the act of giving and to the donation itself. The Buddha used the term kaga to refer to the inner virtue of generosity that ensures that dana is connected to the path. This use of kaga is particularly significant because it also means relinquishment or renunciation. An act of generosity entails giving more than is required, customary, or expected relative to one's resources and circumstances. Certainly, it involves relinquishment of the stinginess of clinging of greed. In addition, generosity entails relinquishing some aspect of one's own self-interest. And thus is a giving of oneself. The Buddha stressed that the spiritual efficacy of a gift is dependent not on the amount given, but rather on the attitude with which it is given. A small donation that stretches a person of little means is considered of greater spiritual consequence than a large but personally insignificant donation from a wealthy person. In another writing from this, from Melinda Bondi, who's a Zen monastic, she writes an article called The Dance of Reciprocity. The Buddha uses two words in association with the practice of generosity, dana and kaga. Dana again refers to the act of giving, food, time, money, kindness, or the Dharma. And kaga, on the other hand, refers to this inward disposition that gives rise to the action. The Buddha tells us that generosity allows us to dwell at home with a mind devoid of the stain of miserliness, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. This is why, this is her continuing the article, this is why I've added to my translation of Dana the word reciprocity, which derives a Latin verb meaning to move forward and backward. Reciprocity is like a dance with life itself. It is the air we breathe, the food we eat, the wounds we carry, and the love we share are all given and received. Reciprocity reminds us to look beyond roles to relationships. When we give without differentiating self from other, and when we receive without differentiating it from giving, then we can find the gift of Dana everywhere. And it's this little shift of perception, of perspective, of orientation of, oh, I could do that. You know, to be able to incline the mind to being in the flow of reciprocity, of the giving and receiving. And I love embedded in the kaga word of the inclination of the mind is this relinquishment of greed, of stinginess, of fear, of, I would add to that, separation and isolation. Because if we can really abide in the truth of our connectionness, it's a lot easier to have a sense of flow. Yeah. I've shared the story before and I don't remember it. I think it's an island in Indonesia, although I could be wrong. That the and I don't know if it's still true, but it's one of the stories that Dharma teachers say. So it might be metaphorical. But the idea of it is that on this island that the richest people were those that were most in debt. So if I were to give you I don't know, a flower and you were to give me a pig, I would be the richer because I would owe you so much. And that in the debt, in the indebtedness is the depth of the connection. Yeah. Not really how we're oriented here in the dominant culture in the US, but just that idea of, oh yeah, we are connected with each other and how quickly or habitually for some, it's like, no, I'm okay. No. We say no to things when actually, yeah, I could use some help. But it's so hard for many of us to get there, particularly as women, when we're the ones that typically are like, okay, got this, that, you know, multitasking and the levels of giving and how is it to actually receive? And I remember when my daughter was born, was, it was slightly embarrassing to say, but when she was born, I was like, oh, I need help. Like, if I want to go on a bike ride, I need someone to take care of my daughter. In this way, like, okay, I actually, this truth about a village, it's true, I need a village. But before that, sort of this striving and pride and being independent, and kind of we can, again, I think it's more of a dominant culture, like independence is good, which it is, however, not at the exclusion of our need and the truth of our interdependence, right? Thich Nhat Hanh writes about that so beautifully, that the interbeing of us, and that's really the truth. Martin Luther King, the sort of the, what is it, the mutuality, the fabric of mutuality, mix that quote up a little, but it, there is the basic truth of that. And how often our personality or our conditioning run counter to that truth and be like, no, we have to like pull ourselves up or have to be independent as some kind of merit badge of our effort or our own worth. And it's like, yes and no. Really, when I think there's so much now being written upon the sort of epidemic of loneliness and isolation. And I think that's the acculturation we have to what needing to do it ourselves or feeling like, no, it's okay, I don't need anyone. And it's really, it doesn't serve us. And it also doesn't work. And it's not true. So it's sort of, how do we allow ourselves to back up a little bit? And I think that's why I really love that breathing meditation of like, oh yeah, we're sort of riding this wave of giving and receiving, much as we are in our lives, if we but pay attention to it. What are we actually giving and receiving? And allowing the it to get really subtle. Yeah, it doesn't have to be the big things, the big gifts that we give or that receive, but on these momentary, like, here, would you like this? You know, letting someone cut in front of us or move in front of us or holding the door. All these simple things that we don't know the impact that these acts of small acts of generosity have, much the same if we don't really pay attention, we can miss the impact it has on us. Like, I could have missed that with my daughter. He could have said no, or I couldn't have just really paid attention to while I was riding. This is so fun to ride her horse. Yeah. Another poem. Liquid Generosity by Ray Lucero. The ocean offers her abundance. Are you jealous of the ocean's generosity? Why would she refuse to give this gift to anyone? Fish do not hold her sacred liquid in cups. They swim in huge liquid freedom. Be a fish. Swim in your boundless abundance. Share that abundance. Generosity is only limited by unwillingness. Yeah, be a fish. A fish does not hold the water in the sacred liquid in cups. There is boundless freedom. Can we allow ourselves to imagine abiding in this boundless freedom of generosity? Again, not about money or things, but in this intentionality, the attitude and the kaga of it, a willingness to be relinquish a stinginess, relinquish a miserliness. And I would really put fear and isolation in there. It's a in the Buddhist sense, I use this word in the Buddhist sense, it's just a delusion. It's a thinking of delusion, right? And being able through our practice as we do week after week, day after day, being able to see more clearly, oh, right, this interdependence, this nation of how the fish and the ocean relate to each other. From Rumi, the ground's generosity takes in our compost and grows beauty. Try to be more like ground. Let's see. Sorry. I used to print everything out. It was a little easier to find, so bear with me as I look for this quote. It's an excerpt from Richard Wagamese Embers, and he says, "Me, he's this is the, we asking a wise elder, why am I alive?" And the elder says, "Because everything is me. No, I mean the purpose." Wise elder says, "That is the purpose, to learn about your relatives, me, my family." The elder woman says, "Yes, the moon, the stars, the rocks, the trees, the plants, water, insects, birds, mammals, your whole family. Learn about that relationship, how you're moving through time and space together. That's why you are alive." And I think embedded in this little excerpt is this, again, this generosity. If we allow ourselves to drop into the truth of our interconnection, you know, we are made of the same stuff of the earth. We are made of stardust. The same things as the animals around us and the trees. If we allow ourselves to truly understand that viscerally, a lot easier to be generous, right? Because there isn't the separation. It pierces that notion of the tribalism of this is me, this is mine. You're over there, the othering that is so prevalent in our time right now. And but being able to again allow ourselves to take our place in the family of things and allow that to be the celebration of because we everything is alive. In the beautiful book, Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Kimmerman, she talks about in the indigenous world, the aliveness of different things, that the stones are alive, and that moving through the world as if things are alive. And in the language of her people, there are different verbs for when you're in communicating or exchanging with something that is alive versus something that is not. So if I'm talking about an airplane, that would be a different verb than if I was talking about a bird. I saw the bird fly overhead. That would be one way. If I saw an airplane fly overhead, that would be different. in the way that this orientation towards seeing the world that is around us as alive can be a profound shift, right? Seeing the world around us as alive, we are alive, so is everything else. Oh, again, taking our place in the family of things that are living, breathing, moving, growing, and allowing that place of generosity, that kaga, that it's like the connection is already there, right? We are wired to be interconnected, and we are acculturated to not believe it, or not to know it, or not to cherish that. And again, through these practices of slowing down, paying attention to the breath, paying attention to how the body is, watching the mind, we can reclaim that which is true, reclaim our interconnection, and allow ourselves to abide in that, and then be in more of that place of flow. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and just kind of pull your energy back in from the screens. It's helpful again, put hand to the heart, hand to the belly, of sort of feeling yourself back in your body. If it was helpful then, and helpful again, to kind of again rest in that sort of abiding reciprocity of breath in, breath out. And I'm going to invite you to call to mind that image from Alison Liederman's poem of the 1-year-old, or the 2-year-old, or the 3-year-old, or four-year-old, a little one offering the flower to you, offering the stuffed animal, offering the stone. And how does it feel to accept it? And then offering it back, and the little one accepts it. And to play this game for a bit, you and this little one, giving and receiving the preciousness of a rose petal. With some kids, it might be a lizard or something. But being able to, again, play in this realm of giving and receiving. And the object may change, but just again, hanging in there a little bit with me, with this imagined young one offering you something. You receiving it, offering it back, she receives it, or he, or they. And then imagining yourself as that 1, 2, 3-year-old with something precious that you've just found. Offering it to your adult self. And how does that feel as you imagine this giving and receiving between your younger self and the adult that's here today? Many of us might have grown up in homes where that generosity and reciprocity was not there. Gifts that were offered were unseen for any number of reasons. But just imagining yourself as that little one offering something that is delighting you. Again, the dead beetle, the rose petal, the gooey stuffed animal, the soggy book. And having that offering be received. Thank you. Beautiful. And then so playfully and gently offering it back, and having as a little one taking it back. Yes. And so playing this game. And allowing yourself to notice, how is this in the heart? To feel yourself as both the giver and receiver in this flow of generosity, of reciprocity, of both the kaga and the dana. The intention, the thoughtfulness is there, the abiding in a mind that is connected, free from stinginess and miserliness, to the receiving hands that are awake and aware and willing to receive. How does the heart feel? What do you notice? And then to imagine yourself somewhere in your life today, and the little one may come with you, or maybe she's off to play in the garden. But imagine walking somewhere, maybe in a grocery store or a coffee shop, or walking down the street where you live. And imagine as you're walking, taking in the trees, the plants, flowers, the other humans offering something, and it may be a smile, it may be a blessing of goodwill, may you be happy, a metta phrase. It may be an inward and silent bow, namaste, I greet the God in you. How is it to imagine yourself moving in the world from this place of Kaga? This intention to connect. And then really the abiding in sort of a boundlessness of heart, such that this generosity, these gifts kind of just fall out of the mind and the mouth so easily. These blessings that may be happy, may be peaceful. Or the compliment, I like your hat. You know, whatever it is a way of connecting with someone. But as you are imagining moving in the world in this way, how does it feel in the body? What do you notice through the core, in the heart, in your eyes, in the jaw? As you allow yourself to offer these gifts of generosity, whatever they may be, and they are received. People saying thank you. The connection is there. The reciprocity is there. The delight in the giving and the mere acknowledgement is the gift back. And just imagining that's the world we lived in, where the generosity came so easily, as did the reciprocity and the receptivity. Our gifts were known and accepted. Our gifts were freely offered. And freely received. So I'm going to stop there. And thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.